Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And yeah, we know we had three crazy martinis on Thursday, but Jim, I'm not even sure that they rank that high compared to the three crazy martinis we've got today. So on the positive side, we're sending out on a really high, crazy note at the end of this work week, but these are some real doozies. All right, let's dive right in. Shockingly, Roy Moore is the centerpiece of our first one. Election Day in Alabama is on the 12th. That's next Tuesday. It's comments he made back in September, actually, that are raising a lot of eyebrows now, and justifiably so, assuming this quote is correct. It was originally quoted at the time by the Los Angeles Times, and it's a new story out of Newsweek that has brought this to the attention of many people once again. Here's the Newsweek version of the story. At a campaign event earlier this year, turns out it was in September, a black audience member asked Moore for his opinion on when the last time America was great, probably in connection with President Trump's slogan of Make America Great Again. Moore responded, quote, "I think it was great at the time when families were united. Even though we had slavery, they cared for one another. Our families were strong. Our country had a direction," unquote. Jim, I don't even know what to say here other than anyone who harkens back to a time when slavery is the pinnacle of the American experience, they are damaged in a number of severe, severe ways. First of all, the families weren't kept together often at all because family members were getting sold to other people. You'll have a better rant than I do, but I have no idea how to fully explain how stupid this is.
The opening statement of my rant will be, dude, do you even history? Because no. Separating families by selling them is not family values. That is not the good old days for anybody other than perhaps the slaveholders. Trent Lott got thrown out for yearning for the good old days of segregation. Roy Moore doesn't even want that. No, things were on the downslide then. It really peaked back before the 1860s. It is an ugly stereotype of the of Southerners that I cannot believe this. But Greg, we're in this weird kind of world where I'm not sure that's the worst thing he said recently, because the comment that has me, you know, really going right up to the edge of inappropriate profanity on my Twitter feed and other venues is his statement, which ironically in August, but somehow was not really widely reported. It is now kind of getting, for some reason, it's getting a great deal of traction. He's being interviewed by The Guardian. By the way, if you're a Republican Senate candidate, very little good can come from an interview with The Guardian. Right? They're a left and center paper based over there in the UK. They have a very big audience around the world. But look, they're left of center. You should be ready for some fairly tough questions from The Guardian. This is not going to be Sean Hannity softballs, unless I remember that, you know, Roy Moore managed to botch that one too. The topic turned to Russia, and the interviewer mentioned, you know, Reagan said that Russia was the focus of evil in the modern world. Roy Moore responded, and you can go online, find the video yourself, says, "You could say very well that about America, couldn't you?" And you can kind of see the interviewer taken aback. It's like, you think? But it's like, it wasn't like a sarcastic of, oh, yes, obviously it is. It's like, no, wait, no, really? You really think that? And Moore said, well, we promote a lot of bad things. The interviewer asked, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, gay marriage. And no. Regardless of whatever your opinion on gay marriage is, the American attitudes on gay marriage do not make us the focus of evil in the modern world, and I don't think we promote a lot of bad things en toto. Do I have disagreements with the American government? Yes, listeners get to hear this just about every weekday. Do I have probably other parts of the country that don't live up to our values? Absolutely. But when you start tossing around language like America is the focus of evil in the modern world, Greg, why is he not running for Senate in Russia? I mean, I would kind of make a prerequisite of running for office in the United States of America. I'd prefer if you liked this country. I'd prefer if you did not, you know, come across as this utter contempt. And I think, I don't know if you, this is the sort of thing where it's very easy to imagine Roy Moore denying ever saying it, except that it's on video. And I think what it is he simply doesn't think through what he's saying at any given moment, right? You know, well, Russia is the focus of evil. Well, maybe we are, too. No, we're not. So anyway, is, you know, folks who, you know, this is a lot of Republicans have found themselves in this awkward spot where they don't like the idea of electing a Democrat. I mentioned earlier in the week this idea that, you know, Roy Moore gets wins the election, he gets seated. There's immediately a Senate ethics investigation. If the ethics investigation comes back and says, yeah, the allegations are accurate, you know, we think that these allegations are credible, then the Senate would vote to expel him and the Republican governor would appoint a Republican replacement, and the Republicans don't lose the seat and they get somebody better than Roy Moore in that seat, which probably right now would be any other Republican in the state of Alabama. But I don't, we'll see how this shakes out. The irony is you don't even need to go back to the allegations of inappropriate pursuit of teenagers in his 30s when he's making statements like this. I think he's going to be a colossal embarrassment to Republicans. I think he cannot control his mouth. I think he's going to constantly be making inane statements like this one for whatever amount of time that he's in the U.S. Senate if he wins. And there's one other note that I should point out today. One other bizarre development because of the year. This even, you know, did she give you a sense of how crazy the day is, dear listeners? Greg and I didn't even put this on our list of crazy martinis. It turns out, remember that yearbook that Roy Moore allegedly signed of a teenage girl, which kind of indicated that they may have had an inappropriate relationship? Well, Beverly Young Nelson will have a news conference later today. She indicates the date and location to the yearbook were added by her, but the signature is Roy Moore's. Now, is she lying? This is the sort of thing that makes people look at your story quite differently. Because once you've misrepresented something as being part of Roy Moore's signature, it makes the rest of the story look much more shaky. Do we know what happened between the two of them? No. But we do know that she has now represented at least one part of her statement was not accurate. For better or for worse, I would say for worse, there are still like eight other accusers that have not had this kind of misrepresentation. But for anybody who looked at that signature and said, ah, you know, the signature on that part doesn't match or something like that, lo and behold, credit where it's due. They were correct. So, yeah, so that's Alabama, everybody. And that's just our first martini.
Jim, let's move on to the second crazy martini now. And yesterday, of course, was Pearl Harbor Day. December 7th, 1941 is when the Empire of Japan suddenly and deliberately attacked the United States of America. 76 years have since passed. We still have some of those wonderful vets with us who can take part in these ceremonies. And this is a time when, of course, a lot of people remember the entrance of the United States into World War II. Some people remember it in an appreciative way. And then there are the French, or at least the French ambassador to the United States. Here is the New York Post. The French ambassador to the United States used Pearl Harbor Day as an occasion to bash America's position on World War II in the 1930s. Quote, "In this Pearl Harbor Day, we should remember that the U.S. refused to side with France and the U.K. to confront fascist powers in the 30s. Gerard Arad wrote Thursday night in a now-deleted tweet. I thought about doing that in a snooty French accent, but I didn't want to detract from the actual message. The French ambassador quickly deleted the misguided tweet, but continued to defend the sentiment in subsequent missives. Quote, UK, France, and US committed awful mistakes in the 30s. Because of its geography, France was the first to pay for them. In yet another tweet, he finally acknowledged the U.S. contribution in the war. Quote, we are immensely grateful for what the U.S. did for France in 1944, but it is a fact that U.S., France, and U.K. committed mistakes in the 30s. So, Jim, he misspelled appease in that first tweet when it comes to confronting fascism, and it took him three tweets to remember, oh, yeah, you're the reason we're not speaking German.
Ordinarily, the most controversial statement by any European diplomat or official would come from the German foreign minister, Sigmar Gabriel, saying that in response to the U.S. Moving its embassy to Jerusalem, quote, we need first and foremost to describe our positions, and in some cases, sometimes vis-a-vis our allies, spell out the limits, where the limits of our solidarity are. I don't know about you, Greg. I'm going to say, hey, Germany, how about you sit this one out? Okay, you got a really bad history of telling Jews where they can and can't go or where they should go. This is a good opportunity to be quiet and just exercise a little modesty on this very, very sensitive topic. But beyond that, yes, this French ambassador, I mean, is he trying to resign? Is he trying to get fired? This is the sort of thing you do when you're like, I'm tired of this job. Who was it? The airline steward, then he's flight attendant who pulled the emergency line, made the inflatable ramp and all that kind of stuff. This is the sort of thing you do when you really don't want your job. Because I don't know about you, Greg. I always thought diplomats were supposed to be, you know, diplomatic. And here's why you stink on this important day is really kind of the opposite of that. I was over in Turkey for 2 years, dealt with a lot of embassy employees. I managed to not create an international incident for 2 years, Greg. I kind of feel pretty good about myself this morning. It's kind of like all the scandals. All of us are much better men than we thought we were now that we know that, you know, Matt Lauer has his secret button to open up a dungeon or something like that. All of us could be professional diplomats considering what the French ambassador has said. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hammer home how rotten America is on Pearl Harbor Day because my country really has the standing to say, look, we stood up to Hitler. I mean, you know, almost half of us.
Yeah, they only gave him Czechoslovakia, and then they lasted a whole 6 weeks before surrendering.
You know, the Maginot Line speed bumps were very effective. It was a, you know, that blitzkrieg slowed down to, you know, 15 miles an hour to get over those.
All right, let's move on to the craziest martini of the day. We've got another congressional resignation. First, we had John Conyers. Then we got Al Franken resigning at some point in the future, we think. And now we have a Republican, Arizona Republican Congressman Trent Franks. And when this news first broke, we didn't know exactly what the story was. And for folks who know about Trent Franks and how he's been such a strong social conservative, and those who care about those issues are saying, oh, please, not Trent Franks trying to grab or initiate an inappropriate relationship with a staffer. Well, turns out that wasn't the case, but this is the case. Here is part of Trent Franks' statement on why he's resigning. Given the nature of numerous allegations and reports across America in recent weeks, I want to make one thing completely clear. I have absolutely never physically intimidated, coerced, or had, or attempted to have any sexual contact with any member of my congressional staff. However, I do want to take full and personal responsibility for the ways I have broached a topic that, unbeknownst to me until very recently, made certain individuals uncomfortable. And so I want to shed light on how those conversations came about. And then Franks goes on to talk about how he and his wife struggled with infertility, experienced some miscarriages, tried to have a surrogate mother who then reneged on the deal and kept the babies. They did eventually get twins through a surrogate mother. And then as those kids grew up, they wanted another sibling. And so did Franks and his wife. And he was frustrated about this and apparently decided to talk about it with some staffers. And he says, quote, due to my familiarity and experience with the process of surrogacy, I clearly became insensitive as to how the discussion of such an intensely personal topic might affect others. I have recently learned that the Ethics Committee is reviewing an inquiry regarding my discussion of surrogacy with two previous female subordinates, making each feel uncomfortable. I deeply regret that my discussion of this option and process in the workplace caused distress. Here's the Paul Ryan statement, at least part of it. Last Wednesday, the speaker was briefed on credible claims of misconduct by Representative Trent Franks. He found the allegations to be serious and requiring action. The next day, the speaker presented Representative Franks with the allegations, which he did not deny. The speaker told Representative Franks that he intended to refer the allegations directly to the House Ethics Committee and told him that he should resign from Congress. The allegations were filed with the Ethics Committee last Friday, and today the speaker accepted a letter of resignation. So, Jim, while Franks doesn't come out and say it, it seems pretty clear that he perhaps asked some of these female staffers if they would be the surrogate. Otherwise, simply an awkward conversation about his frustrations wouldn't necessarily lead to an immediate demand for resignation. I would commend everyone to the Morning Jolt today, as Jim, I think, very respectfully lays out the heartache and the frustrations and all the emotions that go into infertility and what the Frankses were probably going through here. But that doesn't mean you can bring it up in that way with your staffers, Jim.
Yeah, I want to thank you. It was the only way I could think of to accurately describe. You hear about this story, and you just picture the House Ethics Committee staff when this complaint comes in. And all the questions going through their mind as like, what was he thinking? And how did he even bring up this topic? And why did he think this would be an appropriate request? And what's more, Greg, what was he thinking? No, really. This is the first in vitro fertilization sex scandal that we've seen in Congress. We've seen a lot of cases of the boss basically pursuing female subordinates for his own pleasure. This is not what Trent Franks was doing. And I kind of feel like, obviously, look, he should not be lumped in with the John Conyers and all the other allegations we've heard. As he lays out in that letter, and I, you know, kind of alluded to this. Look, this is exactly the kind of material that's good for the three martini lunch. So years ago, another couple I know was attempting to have children and not having success. And we find out that another couple friend of ours was pregnant. They were not at that 3-month point where it usually becomes safe to discuss it. You're kind of past the biggest window or highest risk of miscarriages, things like that. But hadn't reached that point. So they had told me, but they weren't really ready to make an announcement or let anybody know. Well, first couple of having problems, notices that the wife in the second couple is not drinking at dinner and says, "Oh, you're not drinking." And my friend, you know, tries to make some sort of excuse and it doesn't pass the smell test. And the first wife says, "You're pregnant, aren't you?" And immediately gets very upset and storms away from the table. Now, I remember at the time being ludicrously offended and just saying, "Oh, this is a terrible reaction. How can you do that? You're making somebody else feel terrible for what's ordinarily wonderful news." And then I spoke to some other couples, including folks I'm very close to, who said, when you can't have a child, everybody else's child feels like one that was stolen from you. It's not logical. It does not make sense. That's not the way the world works. But it's very hard to be happy for others when you feel like you're being punished. And some of you could say whether it's fate or whether it's God, for some reason you're not getting something that you feel like you deserve and you feel like there's something wrong with you, like you've done something for something like that. So I'm sure Trent Franks and his wife are going through this period, an exceptionally difficult time, and he probably deserves some sympathy. Having said all that, you really can't make this kind of request of your staff. This is not just hey, I need you to work the weekends or something. This is not, the routine requests. What's notable about how this is similar to this, all the other previous scandals we've heard about, is it represents a boss, a person in authority, not really putting themselves in the shoes or in the mind of the person of the subordinate. How would you like it if your boss asked you to carry his child? You obviously sympathize, but you're probably not willing to go through all that. This is probably not how you pictured having your first child. But if you say no, you've just denied your boss something that he clearly wants more than almost anything else in the world right now. You've just put your employee in an extraordinarily awkward situation. And then every decision you make about that employee afterwards, they're going to say, well, did I not get that promotion because I did a bad job? Or did I not get that promotion because I wasn't willing to carry his child for 9 months? You're putting your employee in an almost impossible spot, and you just have to have better judgment than that. You have to see your employees as human beings, and you kind of have to think about how will they feel if you make a enormous request like that. It just is the sort of thing that just doesn't appear appropriate for the office. Now, whether this requires resignation, I don't know. Different people will have different responses. He has voluntarily chosen to resign. Clearly, Paul Ryan was not pleased, and it's pretty understandable why. There probably should be consequences for something like this. Somebody asked to me, how do you judge something like this? And one of the things I wondered was, is this a momentary lapse in judgment or is this a repeated series of events that indicates a pattern of behavior? And the fact that it was more than one staffer that he made this, pretty inappropriate request of indicates that maybe it's time for Trent Franks to move on and do something else with his life.
On that note, we will call it for this week. We are expecting, I believe, 1 to 3 inches in Washington. So hopefully there's some milk and bread left on the shelves at your local supermarket. And if we all survive, I'll talk to you on Monday.
Stay strong, Greg. Stay warm.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend and join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.